So we're holding on Memchesim at Aleph by the Mishnah, two-thirds of the way down the Amud. Continuing on the topic, the previous Mishnah and the Gemara have been talking about various things that eventually stopped existing. The Nesota was eventually discontinued, the Egla Rufa, etc. Mishabotla Sanhedrin, when the Sanhedrin was bottle, Bottle Ashim Beis HaMishtoris. At that point, song ceased from Beis HaMishtoris, from parties. Usually actually Beis HaMishtar in Gemara terminology a lot of times means weddings, but the different Rishonim talk about it. It means more like places where they drink, or pubs, sort of. After how long before the Churban? So there are some Mephoshim who say that it actually means at the time of the Churban. At that point, the Sanhedrin had to leave Yerushalayim. They went to Yavne, and they went to all the different Goliaths. Well, so one possibility that means at the time of the Churban. Another possibility that means when they had to leave Lishkas HaGolus, 40 years before the Churban. 40 years before. And then there's another interesting, because we talked about in a few places, and we talked about in Sanhedrin and some other places, that 40 years before the Churban, murders were getting so common. We talked yesterday about this character, Elazar ben Dinai, and others, that they didn't have power to be able to judge roitzim anymore, to be able to judge murderers, and therefore they figured, better let's leave the Lishkas HaGolus, and that way we're not responsible, so to speak, because if we can't execute, then at least we can't be still in possession of that power. Anyway. And then there's actually a possibility that Dodos of Rishonim, a sefer on Jewish history, brings another interesting possibility. He mentions, based on something that Josephus writes, that a few years after the Romans had conquered Eretz Yisrael, so we're talking 120, 130 years before Churban, they officially abolished the national Sanhedrin and set up five local Sanhedrins in different places in the country, like instead of the Romans. So like instead of there being one national one for the whole Jewish people, for the whole country, it was just like local ones. So maybe that's what it means over here in Shabbat and Sanhedrin, even though, I mean, eventually they regained enough of their power and they continued to exist for a long time after that. But at that point, the Rishonim gives one of the reasons, by the way, why, what's the connection? And we'll talk about it in the Gemara over here. But the Rishonim gives the connection that as long as there was a Sanhedrin sitting in the Lishkas HaGolus, they had the power to be able to prevent people from saying Divrei Nevola, lewd things or whatever, improper things in their songs. Once the Sanhedrin lost that power, then they didn't have the ability to prevent that. People are going to be singing at these Vatim Mishnois, they're going to be singing Matzah Kasher songs. So therefore, they made no more singing B'chlal, because we don't have the ability to be able to police what kind of singing is going to be done. Shenema, the pasuk says, Vashir lo yishtu yayin, remember, they will no longer drink wine together with songs. How that relates to the Sanhedrin, we'll see in the Gemara. Another one, Mishamaisin Neviim are shown in Batla Urim Betumim, when the earlier Neviim died, and the Gemara will discuss in other days who these earlier Neviim are, Batla Urim Betumim and the Urim Betumim were nisbatal. They stopped working. The famous Urim Betumim, that they would ask the Kohen Gadol for the message, and the letters would light up, or whatever, that stopped. Mishacharat Beit HaMikdash, when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Batla Shomer v'notis Tzufim, the Shomer ceased to exist. Shomer is a famous worm that was used to cut stones, and we'll talk about it on the day. And Nofis Tzufim, Batla means it ceased to exist, or it's no longer to be found. Even in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, it was very rare. We know the story from the famous story from Gittin, where Shlomo HaMelech had to turn heaven and earth upside down to find Ashmedai to find out the secret of where it is. But and Nofis Tzufim, the Gemara will discuss, a couple of possibilities of what Nofis Tzufim is, but it's some particularly high-quality flour or honey or whatever. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. Opotu anshei amona miYisrael, and people who have amuna ceased from the Jewish people. Meaning, the Gemara will discuss exactly what these anshei amona are, but basically Rashi says that people who have such tremendous bitachon and eivishter that they're not worried about that they're missing anything or that they're going to lose anything. That's a high level of amuna that ceased with the disruption of the Tzimitish. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Shi Hashem ki gama chasid." We're going to help us, Hashem, because the chasid and the kipasu amunim ibnei avim. The pasuk finishes off with the amunim, the people who have amuna, have ceased from among people. Reb Shimon Gamliel, "Hey, Reb Yeshua, the yom shecharav beis mikdash, from the day the beis mikdash was destroyed, any yom she'ein beitzlala, there's not a single day when there isn't a curse. V'lo yada latal l'bracha, and even the dew doesn't fall for a bracha. Usually, dew is automatically a bracha, but here it's not even." And Maharal points out, you have Yom Shein Beitzlala, you have by daytime the Kola, and the dew usually falls by night, that's not a bracha, so you have like both day and night are no good. The little tama peiros and the good taste of the fruits has been taken away. Rabbi Yossi, a mafnit of shuman peiros. Rabbi Yossi says also the fatness of the fruits has been taken away. The Maharal says that means the substance of them, but they don't have the same kind of substance. They're not as substantial as in size and I guess in fatness and whatever as they were before. And Tiferes Yisrael says it's talking about the nutrition in it. Rav Shimon Elazar, actually what it is the lack of tara, the fact that people are not careful with tumah v'tara, that took away the taste and the smell from the fruit. A meiser is not what's shumah v'dogan, and the lack of taking meiser, as we talked about yesterday, that many of the Amei Aretz didn't take meiser, that took away the fatness of the grain. So again, either it's not as big and substantial as it was before, or that it doesn't have the same nutritious value that it used to. Whereas the Chachamim say, Znus and Kishuf took away everything. The taste, the smell, the shuman. Who says the pasuk that we quoted, Bashir lo yishtu yayin, they won't drink wine to the accompaniment of song, who says that has anything to do with the bittul of the Sanhedrin? Because you have a different pasuk in Eicha. Zakenim mishar shavasu. The zakenim, the elders, meaning the Talmid Chachamim, have stopped sitting at the gate, which means at their normal sitting place, because usually they'd sit in the gate of the city. Bachurim min ginasim, and the bachurim therefore have stopped their songs. So we see that there's a connection between the bittul of the Sanhedrin and no more singing. So now the Gemara goes into this topic a little bit about singing. Amar Rab, Udna b'shamra zimra te'afer, an ear that hears singing should be torn out. Rava says another thing, zimra b'beisa, if you have songs in the house, chorva b'seifa, it brings a destruction in the threshold of the house. So the destruction starts there and works its way to the rest of the house. What this means, by the way, as far as practicalities, as far as singing and listening to music and whatever, when we finish the discussion, we'll talk about the practicalities of it, what the various Rishonim and Acharonim say on it. But let's first learn the straight Gemara. Shenema, Kol Yisher B'Chalon, they have a pasuk in Tzfanya, in context of talking about the destruction of Nineveh, but the pasuk says, Kol Yisher B'Chalon, a voice sings in the window, Chod of Basach, there's destruction at the threshold, Ki Arza Eva. Because the Arza Eira is a phrase that Gemara is going to explain in a second what it means. Literally, it means the Arza, the cedar, Eira, has been uncovered. Gemara is going to deal with what that phrase means. But in other words, in context of the pasuk, they're saying Nineveh is going to be so completely destroyed, you're going to have like birds nesting in the windows over there and then twittering and whatever. But we're connecting it with, because there's Kol Yisher B'Chalon, because there's a voice singing in the window, and actually Marshall says specifically this is in fact talking, just as in the simple meaning of the pasuk, it means that people raise birds, for example, or parakeets or whatever that sing. Therefore, Chod B'Basas. And what's Maiki Arza Eira? Omer Rav Yitzchak, it means like this. You're going to say, Bais HaMasukach HaMasubach, or HaMasukach HaRozim Yiru. Should we assume the word Eira is related to the word Yiru, which means a city? That a house that has a cedar roof, a very strong roof, is as strong as a city? Don't think that. Ella, people buy some a subach ba'arazim. No, it means even a house that's roofed with cedar, which is very strong, Nisrei Eira, will get weakened as a result of this singing in it. So Eira, as Rashi says, is one of the Russian, like Oru, Oru, destroy it, destroy it. So even such a strong house will be destroyed. Amar Rav Ashi, Shmamina, by the way, we see from this pasuk, since it mentions Chod of Basach, destruction from the threshold, we see from that, Ki Matzo Churba, when destruction starts attacking a house, the Seifa, whatever mach, so it begins at the threshold.
At the threshold of the entrance.
Actually, there's a Yerushalmi that seems to indicate that there's that we're talking about here about termites destroying a house, and a lot of times, they're going to start at the outside and work their way in.
Usually, starting in the basement and then the basement.
But in those days, houses didn't usually have basements or attics. Shenema Chod of Basach, as the pasuk says, destruction at the threshold. Or you have a different pasuk that tells this. Ushia yukas shar, a destruction. Ushia means destruction, or not just desolation. Desolation yukas shar, that destroys the gate. So we see again that the gate is the first thing destroyed when the house is desolate. In fact, I once saw a house that's being attacked, it's an abandoned house, and it's being attacked by Shadim, Rashi says, and they're banging away at it like an ox roaring. That's what Rashi says, yeah. Daniel Yoda says an interesting idea, that when you have people singing in a house, people are going to crowd around to try and listen in. You're going to have to appoint a guard at the door to prevent it, or somebody, a doorman, to prevent people from just wandering in. Therefore, that's going to keep out the poor people as well, who should be able to come in and you'll give them tzedakah. Therefore, it's appropriate that the destruction starts at the threshold of the house where you're preventing the aniyim from coming in. Amarapona, Zimra de Nagdi Udabakri, the songs of Nagdi, Rashi says, means people who pull boats. In those days, they had like barges on rivers. A lot of times, they'd be pulled. They'd be pulled along. You'd have people or animals walking by the riverbanks over there and pulling them with ropes. They're towing them with ropes. Even nowadays, you have in some places where they do like that. Right. So that. So their song.
The boat is in the water,
and the barge is in the water, and there's ropes tied to it, and they're walking along the sides of it.
You don't do it now, but you see the place where they used to go.
So their singing is allowed, because all they're doing it for is just in order to keep themselves at an even pace. And also the bakri, also of people who are herding cattle. Same idea. What they're doing is, the Rashi says, when they're having the cattle plow, again they need a song like to keep the cattle going straight. So that's allowed. Jidardoi oser, whereas the songs of weavers are oser, because they're not doing it in order to be able to do their work more easily. They're just doing this for the fun of it. Actually, the Oruch brings a different gilsa, not jidardoi, but jidildoi, meaning of leather workers, tanners. So actually, the high going brings an explanation that the word is, the singing of the Nagdi and the Bakri was fine because they didn't sing about improper subjects. They didn't sing obscene songs, whereas the Gildoi, whatever it was, sang songs that had obscene content in them, and therefore were saying that's awesome. Rav Huna bottled Zimra. One time Rav Huna abolished, nobody's to be singing anymore. Prices all of a sudden fell so much that 100 geese could be bought for a zuz, and 100 saw of wheat could be bought for a zuz. And nobody was bothering because prices are so cheap. Even though prices are so cheap, nobody was willing to buy because they felt like it could go even lower. It's priced too high, basically. In other words, that his gzera, in other words, had a good effect on the economy.
Prices
falling so cheap, so now anybody can afford it. Also, Rav Chista Zalzadle. Then Rav Chista later on came along. Zimra is singing. Yeah, so again, we'll talk about the practical halachas. We'll talk about soon. Also, Rav Chista Zalzadle. Rav Chista came along and was careless with this takana of Rav Huna, namely, if people are singing, he doesn't object. Now, at that point, prices all of a sudden started going up, where you'd want to be able to buy one single goose for a zuz, and you couldn't find, it wasn't available.
This
is long after the Churban. We're going down to Chista, a couple hundred years after the Churban, Okay, I mean, we might as well discuss at this point, actually, I mean, what the practicalities are of this. So first of all, there's different opinions among the Rishonim. Are we talking about over here, are we talking about verbal singing, or are we talking about with instruments? Is one aspect of it. Zimra, on the face of it, means vocal singing. And in fact, Rambam writes as such in a tshuva, that even vocal singing is also, unless it's like we said, the nagdi or the bakri, the barge pullers or the field workers or whatever. However, in Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam writes that only what's also after the Churban is singing accompanied by music. So a bit of discussion among the poskim, which one to follow. Usually we say we hold like the Rambam in what he writes in Yad HaChazaka versus what he writes in the Tshuva. On the other hand, the Bach says maybe you should be machmir according to what it says in the Tshuva. They also discuss, are we talking about across the board, or are there exceptions to it? For example, they talk about another example where it would definitely be mutter. Is, for example, a woman trying to get their kid to sleep with a lullaby. That's for sure allowed.
Without we changing the meaning, he said, first of all, because it was lewd. Now we're saying
no, so
after the Churban.
No, so I'm saying there's a few different aspects. We're saying that in Bottle Sanhedrin, Bottle Hashem Vesem Mishnah. The next Mishnah, the last Mishnah of the Masechta, which we'll learn tomorrow, Bess Hashem, talks about further Xavis that were made as far as musical accompaniment. So, but there is also, over here we're talking about Beis HaMishnah. So there are a number of Rishonim who say that what we're talking about over here specifically is they asked singing in Beis HaMishnah, in a place where they're drinking wine. In a place where they're drinking wine, and even the Zagos Mordechai, one of the Rishonim, who says that it refers to a place where they're only drinking wine, not even accompanied by food. Whereas if it's a meal, if it's like a chasana or whatever, where there's food and wine, then it's not a problem. At least vocal singing. And then that's what I'm saying. So you have all the discussion, whether it's only vocal, whether it's vocal and instrumental. There's other things also. We'll learn next week when we get to the beginning of Gittin, that Zion, there's a bit of discussion about it in the Gemara. There's a choice that's over there that says that maybe the problem only is if you're constantly listening to music, like you wake up in the morning to music, you go to sleep at night with music, as kings used to do in those days, that might be the issue. Not necessarily if just you're listening to music at some point during the day. Also, there's the Rif writes on this that all the problem we're talking about over here is secular songs or love songs or whatever. We're not talking about songs in honor of the Eivishter or the Torah or whatever. Those you're allowed to sing at any time. He says everybody does those by weddings and by other simchas and everything. So practically speaking, the ins and outs of these halachas are a little bit complicated. So that's the thing. So obviously there are certain exceptions, as we see already here in the Gemara. And yes, so. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Yosef, Zamri Gavri V'ani Noshi, if the men are singing the main part of the song and women are joining in the chorus, that is Pritzusa. It's Pritzusik. It was called the Shera. Zamri Noshi V'ani Gavri, if it's the other way around, if the women are singing the main song and the men are joining in the chorus, Ke'esh Bin Oris, then it's like fire in flax shavings, meaning very dangerous. And the reason is, Rashi says, because if the women are only singing the chorus, the men who are singing the main part of the song are not going to pay as much attention to them. Whereas if it's the other way around, if the women are singing the main part and the men are just joining into the chorus, they have to pay close attention to what the women are singing in order to join in at the right time. Lamai Nachimina, the Gemara says, what's the practical difference of saying that one is pritzus and the other one is like fire in flax shavings? Well, that truly ho mikameha. The difference is, suppose you have a situation where the people are not going to listen to Beis Din if they tell them that both of them are also. At least start by asking to them by banning the second one, women singing and the men joining in the chorus, because that's the more dangerous one, and eventually maybe you'll be able to ask the other one as well once people are used to that. And Talmud Rabbeinu Yonah give a different explanation. Now what we're saying is the men singing and women joining in at the chorus is likely to lead to the opposite, where the women singing and the men joining in the chorus. Therefore, the Batroli Ha be mevatel the men singing and the women joining in the chorus before it develops into the more dangerous situation of women singing and men being in the chorus.
That's either way.
I mean, Shas is, Rashi says, Shas is Batroli Ha mitameha. If you have a choice, take the lesser of two evils. Be mevatel the worst of the two evils. Talmud Rabbeinu Yonah says it means be mevatel the lesser evil before it develops into the greater evil. Amar Rav Yechon, Kol Hashoseh Ba'Bal Minei Zemer, if somebody drinks to the accompaniment of any of these four kinds of musical instruments that we're going to mention, maybe Chomesh Puronius La'olam, and he brings five kinds of punishment to the world. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Hoy Mashkimei Ba'Boker, woe to those who wake up in the morning, Sheicho Yudofu, and immediately they start running after beer or other kinds of strong drink to drink. Alcoholic drink, ma'achne baneshek, who stay up late in the evening, yayin nevlikim, to be heated up, to be lit up by drinking wine. V'hoyakino v'nevel tofacholol, so they have harps and kino v'nevel tofacholol, there are four different kinds of musical instruments, there are harps and violins and drums and flutes, whatever. And they're drinking wine at their party. And they're not looking at the work of Hashem. They're not considering the fact that this is a very dangerous way to do things, and the Eibishter is going to have something to say about it. Maximach. So that's what we're saying if you're drinking to the accompaniment of these four musical instruments. And it's brought from Ersadi Zoyin, doesn't mean Dabka, these four. These four are just the typical examples of musical instruments.
So in a wedding, you're always drinking.
But that's the thing, especially according to Hagoris Mordechai, at a wedding, you're not only drinking. You're drinking as well as eating food. That's different.
Right.
We're saying over here where you're only drinking.
Yeah. With music.
Maximach, so what are the following circumstances? Therefore, my people have gone into Golos because of a lack of Das, meaning Shagom and Golos, which people call Golos for the world. And they make their honorable people to be people who are affected by famine, meaning Shemabian Ravlaim, they bring a famine into the world. Then the passage continues, it makes their multitudes be terribly thirsty, meaning Shagurim and Latorah, they cause that the Torah is forgotten by those who learn it. They're thirsty for Torah and they can't get it. The passage continues, skipping one passage, which we'll get back to that one passage soon. Vayishach Adam Vayishbal Ish. Man is brought low, and humans are, Adam is Yishach, is bowed down, and Ish is brought low. What does that mean? Shagurman Shiflus L'Soyne Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means they cause the enemy of the Eivishter, which is a euphemism, meaning the Eivishter himself, to be low. Why? Ve'en Ish Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shnei Hashem Ish Mochama. So Vayishbal Ish means they cause the Eivishter to be degrading.
By not singing.
By drinking and singing and then not
speaking.
Right. Yeah. The Amic voice.
If you find that if you sing, let's say, Shir Hashem or things of.
Because Shir Hashem is a different matter, actually. There is actually a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that if people sing Shir Hashem as a popular song, then the Torah comes and complains to the Eivishter that the Jewish people are making me into like a piece of nonsense. Because Shir Hashirim is a holy sefer of Tanakh. It's not meant to be made into stam love songs or whatever. But that's what I'm saying. So the Rif talks about if you're singing songs in praise of the Eivishter or the Torah or whatever, then that's fine. There is the Magen Avraham, for example, talks about the psukim, that songs based on psukim are not necessarily such a good thing unless they're accepted widely by the Jewish people. Don't just start making up songs of your own psukim. Where that leaves much of today's Jewish music, they finish. Anyway.
Who says that?
The Magen Avraham brings that, I think.
We cannot create music.
So it's not right, in other words, to take a pasuk and set it. It's not right to take a pasuk and just set it randomly to music. The Emek Goyim Tishvama, the passage continues, the eyes of the high ones will be brought low. Shagum and Shiflus, Shrei Yisrael, meaning they cause the Jewish people to be brought low. So those are the five things then. They're causing by singing to the accompaniment of wine and then spending their time, their mornings and their evenings doing that. So Marshal has a long explanation that specifically what these people are doing is they're missing Shema in the evening, so they're too busy drinking wine. They're missing in the morning, they wake up for a hangover, so the first thing they're going and doing is looking for shaker, looking for beer, hair of the dog, as they say in English, to get rid of the hangover. So they're missing Shema in the morning as well. And therefore, so that's the five punishments that we're mentioning over here are all related to the fact he explains it bit by bit, how it's related to the fact they're missing Shema as well as the brachas before and after it. He explains how each of these punishments fits one of those brachas of Shema itself that they're missing. Then what does the pasuk say afterwards? This is the pasuk that we skipped before, but in the middle of this description, the pasuk says, "Lachain, because of all of this, Yerchiva Sha'ol Nafsha, Sha'ol meaning Gehenim has opened up its soul, Upara Piel of Lichayik, and it's opened its mouth wide without any limit." Because of these people who caused all these paranias, who caused all these terrible things to happen to the world, they themselves are going to wind up in Gehenna. The Yarad Hadara Bahamayna, their pride and their multitude will go out, Ushayna and all their noisy people, but Olezba and all the happy ones who were happy all their lives, saying that they live for the day, basically, they're going to wind up there. Marshal says, why did the Gemara discuss that pasuk out of order? Because the other Peronius were discussing things that happened while they're still alive. This is talking about what happens to them after 120. So the bottom line as far as halacha is concerned is there are dinim. You can find there's a simon in Shulchan Aruch about the propriety of listening to music. There's a lot of give and take on the whole question. There are certainly situations and types of music which are also, such as, for example, music that, not to put too fine a point on it, arouses a yetzer in a person that shouldn't,
right,
you know?
Let's say classical music or jazz or
contemporary. I mean, what kind of music is it? Is it bringing a person to a better place in Yiddishkeit, or is it dragging a person down into Goyishkeit, you know? So there's that, but there's the whole question of how much vocal music is allowed, and b'chlal, are we talking about occasionally, are we talking about on a constant basis, as Tosfos says in Gittin over there, what kind of song are we talking about? Yeah, there's a lot of details to go into. Mishnah said, Mishnah Nevi'im Rishonim, Man Nevi'im Rishonim, so who are these early Nevi'im? I'm going to put it as a David of Shmuel of Shlomo. Those three. Interesting, by the way, because here we're saying that David and Shlomo were Nevi'im. There's other sources that seem to indicate they weren't Nevi'im. They had Ruach HaKodesh, but weren't on the level of Nevi'im. There's a lot of different sources, pro and con. It's interesting that Rabbeinu Avraham, the son of the Rambam, writes in one of his Trivas that anybody who says David is not a Navi needs to do Trivah for it. because he...
What about Shmuel? He was clearly...
The Shmuel was clearly, and I'll be right, what now? Rav Nachman says, even be made David, Zimin in Solit, the Zimin in Solit, even during the times of David. Sometimes the Urim B'Tumim worked, sometimes not. We find many times in Sefer Shmuel that David asked the Urim B'Tumim and got an answer, but Sharei Shal Tzadek Va'Altzaloi, Shal of Yosef Loi Altzaloi, we find that when David was running away from Avshalom, he asked the Urim B'Tumim for advice, what to do. Tzadek asked by the Urim B'Tumim and got an answer. Avyosser did not get an answer. It was actually the other way around. First they tried Avyosser, and then the Kohen Gadol up to that point. He tried the Urim B'Tumim, didn't get an answer. Shenema, Vayal Avyosser, as the Pasuk says, Avyosser went up, which we're understanding that to mean he went up as in he was relieved from his position as Kohen Gadol. If he doesn't have, if he's not on the level to be able to use the Urim B'Tumim anymore, then he was dismissed from office, and Tzadek took over as the new Kohen Gadol.
Why would that?
So why was that?
Because he
wasn't on the level of Ruach Kodesh for it. He was actually, Avyosser was actually a grandson or great-grandson or whatever of Eli HaKoyen. A while, years earlier, when Nevuah had been given that eventually the Kohen of Jodah is going to be taken away from Eli's descendants. This was it. Okay. So even in David's times, it was already iffy to get an answer from the Urim B'Tumim. But after that, Yitaka don't find any place in Tanakh after that with Urim B'Tumim I mentioned. So that's what we're saying, that they were the Nevi'im Rishonim as opposed to the later Nevi'im, Elio and Elisha and Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and so forth. Most of Rav Abashim.
We didn't have them, obviously.
Yeah, well, they had them. They had them during the whole time of the first Mishmikdash, but they weren't operative anymore, in other words. However, Mosif Rav Bashmul, Rav Bashmul asks a question on this. A pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says, Vayhi Lidresh Elikim, the actual pasuk is, Bimei Zechar Yahu Hamevin Birois Elikim. They were inquiring of Hashem throughout all the days of Zechariah, who was a Navi, who was able to understand with the vision of Hashem. My love, the Urim B'Tumim. Doesn't that mean that they were still asking the Urim B'Tumim in his times? And this is talking about the time of Amatsya and Uziah, which is a couple hundred years after David and Shlomo. It's in the middle of the time of the first Mishmikdash. And so it's like the Nevi'im. No, it can mean that during that time they were asking what the Eishter wants through the Nevi'im, not necessarily the Urim B'Tumim.
To
Zechariah or whatever Navi of that time, yeah. Tashma, come, let's bring a different proof. A Braita says, Mishkara Beit Mikdash Arishon, Batlu Orei Migrash. The Orei Migrash, meaning the cities of Levi'im, which each city has to have a Migrash, an open space around it, would Batlu. In other words, during the time of the second Beit Mikdash, so the Rashash talks about the Levi'im never completely Batlu. Some of the Levi'im went back to live in their ancestral cities, but not all of them. Some of them settled in Yerushalayim, some of them settled in other places. So when we say Orei Migrash Batlu, it doesn't mean completely, but it means they didn't have the full complement of 48 of them anymore. They had less of them. Upasku Urim B'Tumim, also after the first Beit Mikdash was destroyed, the Urim B'Tumim stopped. Upasku Melech Me'Beis David, and also at that point, there's no more kings from Beit David. The Im Lachshach Adam Loimar, so somebody might whisper to you and say, you know what, I have a pasuk that tells us that there was Urim B'Tumim in the time of the second Mishmikdash. The pasuk describes in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, when it lists all the groups of people who came back to build the second Mishmikdash, it mentions there was a group of people who, whether they were Kohenim, there was a suffix on it, we learned in Ksuvah, the whole discussion about it, they weren't able to bring solid proof that they were valid Kohenim. So Vayomer Hatushasa Lahem, Hatushasa, which is Nehemiah, told them, Ashelo Yerichu Mikodesh HaKadoshim, that they're not allowed to eat from Kodshe Kodshim, meaning any kind of korbanos. We had a whole discussion in Ksuvah about they're allowed to eat Trima de Rabbanon.
This
is the time of the first day, early in the second Mishmikdash. And he says, Ad Amoid Kohen L'Urim B'Tumim, until a Kohen arises who's wearing the Urim B'Tumim. Implying, in other words, it sounds as though he's saying, don't worry, it's only a short-term thing that you can't eat in Kodesh HaKadoshim. We'll get the Kohen to wear the Urim B'Tumim and we'll straighten this out. So L'Chorah, it means they have it. This is the beginning of the second Mishmikdash. And Moloi tells such a person, no. It's like when somebody says this isn't going to happen until the Tchias Amazim and Mashiach comes. Meaning, that's what Nehemiah is saying. It's not just a short-term thing. Until Mashiach comes, until the Mashiach comes, and then the Urim B'Tumim will be back, you guys cannot eat Shurim D'Oraisa or Kodshim.
So when did the exact period when Urim B'Tumim left?
So that's what we're saying. Based on this braisa, it comes out they were there until the end of the first Beit Mikdash. So what are you telling me that Nevi'im or Rishonim is David and Shlomo before or right when the first Beit Mikdash was built? El Amar Nachmei Yitzchak Man Nevi'im or Rishonim. No, you know what Nevi'im or Rishonim means? It just means Va'apukim Michagis Chayom Alachi Dachrenim Ninu. It means Rishonim means all the Nevi'im of the time of the first Beit Mikdash, as opposed to Chagis Chayom Alachi who lived at the beginning of the second Beit Mikdash. So when we say Nishamaisim Nevi'im or Rishonim, it means once Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yechezkel, that group of Nevi'im passed away, yeah.
And that was the first
Nevi'im. That was the one of the first Nevi'im. The Tanarabonon, and how do we see the Chagas Chayim Malachi are called the last Nevi'im? We learn in a place, Mishameisu Chagas Chayim Malachi, and he stalked the Ruach HaKodesh Mishrael. Once Chagas Chayim Malachi passed away, the Ruach HaKodesh left the Jewish people. Even so, they still continue to use a baskel, a voice from Shemayim. Incidentally, by the way, there's a sikha and Chelik Yudalad where the Rebbe discusses, we're not saying, unlike the expressions we said in the Mishnah about various things that cease to exist, where the expression for each of them is bottle, bottle Hashem Beis HaMishtoi, bottle, nofetzuch, and this and that, he was saying nistalka, like it was withdrawn. Which means there could be nevuah after that. It just became extremely rare, unlike before that, where it was much more common. And how do we see that? One time, a bunch of the chachamim were reclining at a meal in the upper floor of the house of Guria in Yerichai. They heard a baskel that was addressed to them in Hashemayim. Among you, there's one person who is worthy that the Shekhinah should rest on him. But his generation is not worthy of having such a person among them that would have open Ruach HaKodesh. They all looked at Hillel, realizing that he must be the person among them whom the baskel is referring to. And when Hillel passed away, they set a hesped on him. Hey chassid, hey onav, where is the chassid? Where is the humble one? Talmidei shel Ezra. The Talmud of Ezra. Not literally the Talmud of Ezra, the 400 years after, 300-400 years after Ezra. But meaning, Rashi says, the comparison is just like Ezra came up from, just like Ezra, not Rashi, I don't remember who says this, that just like, maybe not sure, just like Ezra came up from Babel with the Torah and reestablished it in Eretz Yisrael, so did Hillel in his time.
Yeah,
and it's some Guria, with somebody's house. Guria is the name of a person, it was his house.
Was in
Yerushalayim? No, in Yerushalayim, it says. Then there was another time that the Chachamim were reclining at a meal in the upper floor in Yavne. Again, they heard a baskel from Shemayim. Among you, there's one person who's worthy that the Shekhinah should rest on him. But his dur is not, his generation is not worthy of having that happen. They all looked at Shmuel HaKotten, again realizing he must be the one. When he passed away, his figure, they said a similar aspect on him. Hey, honor, hey, chosid, tamidu shel Hillel. Again, because he's like following in the footsteps of Hillel. The afu omer b'shachmi saw, saying, in fact, we find that Shmuel HaKotten actually had Ruach HaKodesh, because right before he passed away, he said, Shimon v'Yishmael l'charva, Shimon and Yishmael will be killed by the sword, namely Reb Shimon the Nasi and Reb Shmuel ben Avisha, the Kohen Gadol, the grandson of the Kohen Gadol, were two of the famous Harodei Malchus. The Chavroi Liptola, his friends will be killed by various other kinds of deaths, Shabbat Kiva, by having his flesh combed off with iron combs, Rabbanim Machabian burned, Tribulum and Baba stabbed, etc. Ushar Amalaviza, the rest of the people will all be robbed of their possessions by the Romans. The Akan Sagin are sitting on Mesi Alama, and many troubles are going to come on the people. He's talking about everything that happened in either. So a lot of different historians discuss. Is he talking about events of the time of the Churban, and in that case he means he passed away before the Churban, or is he talking about events of the War of Bar Kokhba and the aftermath of it, in which case it means he was around after the Churban, and this is like he's predicting all this 20 or 30 or 40 years before it happened.
How long after the Churban was?
52 years.
The
Akoshva's revolt began 52 years after the Churban, and then the Romans eventually crushed it. Yeah. Now, after Rabbi Huda ben Bava, when Rabbi Huda ben Bava was killed by the Romans, they also wanted to say the same hesped on him. Where is the chassid? Where is the onav? Elosh and mitra fashah, but the time was messed up. The time was they didn't have the time for it. Shein maspid and al harugi malchus, because you don't say a hesped for people who were killed by the government. Rashi says because of fear of the king. Especially you're going to have a bunch of people gathered together for a hesped. They're all going to be in trouble. So therefore they can't do that. Mishnah said, Mishachar Beis Mikdash Batal Hashomer, that when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, the Shomer ceased to exist. Which Beis Mikdash, by the way, we're talking about, is a bit of a question among the Mefarshim. The Rosh says, and some other Rishonim say, that it must mean the second Beis Mikdash, because they had to have the Shomer at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash to carve the, as we're going to say soon, to carve the letters on the stones of the Choshen. Anyway. Tanya Rabbanan, Shomer Shavosh Bona Shlomer Es Beis Mikdash. The Shomer was what Shlomer used to build this Mikdash. Shenemer, the Pasuk says about Bayis Bibon, no, you say Evan Shlomer Masa Nivnet. The house, the Beis Mikdash, when it was built of whole stones that were transported there. Meaning, Hadvarim Tiksav and Divir Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says it means exactly what it sounds like. They were whole stones, they weren't carved with iron tools. How can you say that? But you have a different pasuk, in which actually that pasuk is talking in context to talking about Shlomo's palace, but still the Gemara assumes that at this point that it's talking about the Beis Hamikdash as well. Kol Eila, all of these were made out of Avonim Yikoris, so them are precious stones or heavy stones, Megororis Vamagera, cut with saws. So saws, iron saws were used on them. In Cain, Matam Level and Nishma Vais Bibon Noise. So what does it mean when the Pasuk says that no axes or hammers or whatever were heard in the Beis Hamikdash when it was being built? It means Shahoya Maskin Mamachutz, Machnes Mibufnim. It means that they would prepare the stones, they'd carve them and then shape them and whatever outside, off the site of the Beis Hamikdash, and then they'd bring them in already shaped. It seems logical to say that what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, that they didn't carve them at all, is referring to the stones of the Beis Hamikdash, that those were natural, uncarved stones. And what Rabbi Nechemiah is saying, they're talking about the stones of Shlomo's palace.
They were carved.
Which therefore, the idea, well, what's the chiddush then? What's the problem? Shlomo HaMelech's palace doesn't have to be built to any particular specification, because his palace was right next to the Harabais. So therefore, the chiddush would be that there was still no problem cutting them to size, even though it's being built, even though it's being used for a structure right there by the Harabayas. Or maybe even Rav Nechemi would be saying that they quarried them like right off site, right off the Harabayas. Still not a problem.
In other words, they didn't give them shape.
No, in other words, so the idea would be the stones of the Beis Hamikdash, according to what Rebbe is saying, were not shaped. They were carved from the quarry, and that's it. They were in their natural state, whereas the ones for Shlomo's palace were. There was a bit of discussion among the Mefarshim. Are we talking specifically about the stones of the Mizbeach, where we know there's a halacha that can't be carved, or are we talking more generally about the stones of the Heichal? And then what about the Azores? Okay, well, actually, the Azores, yeah. Okay, so the question is, when Nechemiah shomer l'mayo, so fine, according to the Nechemiah, what do they need the shomer for? According to the Yehuda, we understand it. They couldn't carve them with iron tools. Then no, they didn't leave the stones in their natural state. They used the shomer to cut them to size. But according to the Nechemiah, if they could use saws on them, what's the problem? Mibarla, the Chibetanya, he says that they would need the shomer for something else. What it says in Ebraisa, Avonim halolu, these stones, Rashi says we're talking about the stones of the Ephod and the Choshen, the Rambam says it means only the ones on the Choshen. Anyway, in Kos Venosim video, you can't write on them with ink. You can't write the names of the Shvatim on them only with ink, which should never be too Choshen, because it has to be carved with a seal. The Ein Masartin Alem Be'Ivmil, but you can't scratch it out on them using a knife, using a tool, Mishum Shenema B'Miluwaisem, because it has to be complete. Ella, what you do is, you write on them with ink, then you show them the shomer from the outside, and the look like of the shomer, they burst open of their own along the lines that were marked by the with the ink. So then they were just like a fig which splits open during the heat, where it's not missing anything of its substance, it just breaks open from the heat. Or like a valley which splits open during the rainy season, and again, no actual dirt is missing. There's a split in the ground.
They open themselves?
No, not open themselves. So like you mark a line on the stone. You put the shomer there, and now you have a line carved into the stone over there where the shomer saw the line.
Exactly straight.
Yeah. And there's a Tosfos actually in a couple of places that points out that even though the shomer could cut straight, there would still be, if you ran your fingernail along it, you'd still feel imperfections. Therefore, Tosfos mentions that's why even if they had the shomer in the time of the Second Mizmikdash, when the Greeks defiled the stones of the Mizbeach, and later on when the Hashmonaim came, they had to build a new Mizbeach, why couldn't they just take the old stones and recut them with the shomer? Because then they wouldn't be smooth, and the stones in the Mizbeach have to be smooth.
And only the Shamir didn't cut them smooth.
Didn't cut them smooth.
But the Hashmonaim,
so in the end, the Gemara says what they had to do is they put these stones from the old Mizbeach, which had been defiled by the Greeks. They brought carbonus to their getchkes on it, etc. They took those stones and hid them away in one of the chambers of this Mikdash, and they built a new Mizbeach out of new stones. Tanarabanan, Shomer Zeb Briyosik Kisaura, this Shomer is the size of a grain of barley, or Meshesh's Mebreshes Nivra, it was created during Shesh's Mebreshes. Actually, the Mishnah in Ovid says it was created one of the 10 famous Nivra of Erev Shabbos that were created Erev Shabbos Ben Hashemashah. The end called up a kosher yachal lamed upon him. No hard thing can withstand it. Bamem shamer noisa. So how do you keep it? So any container you put it in, it would break through. Kochen noisa the sfugin shal semer. They wrap it in wool. Umanicha noisa the itni shal abra. They place it into a container. Rashi says that itni means a tube. The Ordo says it means more like a basket. Whatever of avar. No, because since it's wrapped in the wool, it can't cut through the wool. So
it's
the wool. No, so you put it in a basket, shall avar of lead, malaya suve seorin, filled with bran from barley, and that keeps it intact.
Lead is very soft.
Lead itself, lead is a metal though. Whatever, it's fine. We'll say that maybe that's the idea. Maybe a harder metal would be a problem. Somebody came up with an interesting notion many years ago that we're talking about that had to be inside a lead container. That must imply it was radioactive. That's how it was able to cut the stones. Somebody else came up with the idea maybe it was some kind of laser. People have all kinds of interesting theories.
Lead, you can draw a line very, very
easily. Yeah, but then you can't cut along it. Amaravashi, Mishachorov Vitishwishan, and other things that we lost once the first Vitishwishan was destroyed, but the Shira Pranda was Chuchet Levana. Shira Pranda, Shira means Meshi, yeah, what's the English word for it? Silk. Silk. Pranda is some kind of high quality silk, glossy silk or whatever, was lost. It's Chuchet Levana, and white meaning clear glass. This also, Tosfos mentions in some places that doesn't necessarily mean these things are completely bottled, just means they became extremely rare. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that mentions Shira Pranda, there's a Gemara in Brachos that mentions one of the Chachamim breaking a cup of Zivista Chivarta, of white glass, at his son's wedding.
It was manufactured in Israel?
Wherever they were manufactured, not necessarily in Israel, but whatever it was, they ceased to exist, or became very, very rare after the Churban. Actually, Yerushalmi has an interesting line about the Schuchat Levana that was foldable. No, about the Tzchokas Levana, about this clear glass.
Oh,
it wasn't just the fact that it was clear glass that was foldable.
Plastic?
Maybe like plastic or something, yeah. One of the Roman historians tells about an inventor who came to one of the Roman emperors and showed him what he calls flexible glass, and the emperor had him put to death because he was afraid that it all upset the markets for gold and silver, so maybe this fellow rediscovered what was lost at the time of the Churban, I don't know. We learn similar in the Braisim, Shachar of Mikta Shushan, Botla Shira Pramda with Sophus Savana, and also Verecha Varzal, also iron chariots. Why is that? One of the Mepharshim talks about a deeper meaning of it, that each of these things refers to a different way of fighting the Yetzirah, that each of those was lost. Yeah. Some say that another thing that was lost with the destruction of the first Mishnah is also frozen wine, which comes from Sneer. Sneer is Mount Hermon, where there's a lot of snow. Which resembles cakes of pressed figs. They would take wine and mix it with the snow, basically, and have like wine popsicles. So that was lost. Okay. The Mishnah said the note is
frozen wine.
Frozen wine, yeah. Renofistor, from another thing the Mishnah had said was lost with the destruction of the Bismikash. In this case, the Bashas, we're talking the second Bismikash. It says one of the things that was lost is Nofistofim, so my Nofistofim. Omadav, Solus Shatsofa Gabinatha. This is the fine flour which floats on top of the sieve. Vedomus Leisash in Eloshavish Vidvashu Shemin. So it resembles. It resembles a dough that was kneaded with honey and with honey and oil. And it was very rich. So Rashi talks about that, in other words, basically exactly that. This fine flour is so rich that it sticks to the sides of the sieve. And therefore, it's like a fresh dough that was just freshly made with oil and honey, which is very rich. Valavia, Mashtay Kikris and Edbakas the Tanner. It means that you'd paste two loaves of bread to two sides of the oven. In those days, the bread was more like pizza, and they'd paste it to the sides of it. Their ovens were shaped like one of those cups upside down with the top removed. You'd paste the bread to the sides of the oven. So you'd be pasted on two opposite sides, but and then they would swell up so much because again the grain was so rich. They would touch each other across the width of the oven.
On both sides inside.
Yeah.
And they would
swell up so the point that you touch it. Rav Yeshua ben Levi Omar, that dvash abomin atzifia. Nofes tzufim is honey that comes from tzifia, the name of a place. Tzifia is the name of a place. Rashi has a gift to me. That's so soon. My mashma, how do we see what's so special about such honey? Kidimatagum of Sheshes, as we find that Sheshes translates a pasuk in the Chumash Devarim that mentions the Amorim attacking the Jewish people who attempted to get into Eretz Yisrael after the Chet HaMeraglim. It says they attacked them like bees. He translates the pasuk, what do you mean like bees? Kimod the nuts on Dabri Yosa, like bees swarm, the shaitan berume alma, that they fly around in the heights and up in the air. And they bring back honey from the grass that grows on the mountains. So we see that they go to the mountains and then they take the nectar from the grass over there and they turn that into honey. So we see that honey from the mountains from high mountains is particularly high quality. It's not awesome. The Gemara says we have a Mishnah in Masechet Machshirin. We had a little bit of this discussion in Masechet Nazir as well. Kol Anitzos Tar, any time when you have pouring one liquid into another, even if the bottom liquid is Tame, or the Rambam says even if you're actually pouring onto a sheretz or something, the liquid in the top Keli remains Tar. We don't say that the column of liquid that connects them, it transmits the Tumah from one to the other. Nitzos means pour. So if you're pouring water or wine or oil or what have you from one container into another, the fact that you have a continuous column of liquid from one to the other, if the bottom one is tummy, doesn't make tummy the top one. Chutz mitvash zifim, that's sapichim, except for honey of zifim and sapichim. How do we know that? It's a din. Except for dvash zifim and sapichim. So my zifim, what is honey of zifim? It means honey that they adulterate, meaning it's such rich, thick honey that people mix into things like water or wine or whatever, cheaper quality things, and nobody realizes it because the honey is so thick. Such honey, because it's so thick, and actually we learned in Nazir as well, not only it's thick, but it's stringy, therefore the nitzik is a chibur, therefore the column of honey that's pouring down is considered solid enough to that the tumor goes from one to the other.
Our
honey doesn't qualify, right?
It's really hard honey.
Yeah, it's not hard, but thick. Yeah. Okay. So, Rish Lakish Amar Shem Mekoyim. Rish Lakish says that Dvash HaZifim is called that after the name of the place it comes from. You have a city in Eretz Yisrael listed in Sefer Yeshua called Zif. So Dvash HaZifim means honey that comes from Zif.
Where's that?
Someplace in the south of Eretz Yisrael. I don't know exactly. I think somewhere in the area of Chevron. Not sure. You have a similar thing, a similar discussion about the meaning of zif, when it says, v'vaya zifim in Tillim, v'vaya zifim, v'yem v'l'shol, halay David. We've got a couple of nun bays of Tillim. The caption of it is that David said it when the zifim, not a couple of nun dalad rather, when the zifim came to Shol and said, David is hiding among us, and David davened for their downfall. What's zifim? My zifim. Amar Rabbi Yechon, b'nei avadam is zifim divreim. It means people who forge, who falsify their words. What does that mean? They were saying Lashon Hara about they were, Rashi says they were lying and telling Lashon Hara. Marshall says that actually if you look in the Pesukim in Sefer Shmuel, it describes the Zifim come to Shoal and tell him David is hiding out among us. You come down with your army and we will be able to hand him over to you. Now they were lying. He wasn't in their power to be able to hand him over. In fact, he was hiding out in the desert near Zif. Therefore, they were lying. They were forging what they're saying. Rabbi Loza says they're just called Zifim because they came from a place called Zif. Kedichtiv Zif v'talam of Olis. Mishnah said a pasuk anshei amana. They said that they could hand him over to Shaul when they couldn't. He wasn't in their hand. Yeah.
They were in which part of
Eretz? Same area. Zif is some part in the south of Eretz Yisrael. David was running around from place to place over there hiding from Shaul.
Neither Sheva,
I don't know, someplace. Yeah. Opposed to Anshe Amona, the Mishnah had said that when the Bismethish was destroyed, people of Amona ceased to exist. It means people who have a very high level of Amona in the Eibishtim. Tanya, Rabbi Lazar Gadolimer. Komish Yeshle Tas Bisalai Va'omer Ma'uchel Amacher. Somebody who has bread in his basket, so he has food for today, but he says, what am I going to eat tomorrow? Any Elam is Tane Amona. He's one of the people who has a lesser amount of Amona. If he had real Amona in the Eibishtim, he would know the Eibishtim can provide it for him every day. That was the lesson of the Mon. Yeah. The story, I believe, is told involving the Alshif told the story about a Yid who hears from his local Rav the concept of Bitachon. He, being a very simple Yid, takes it at face value. He says, in that case, I don't have to go out to work anymore. He sits at home all day, saying Tillim. Akitzer Amaisa, his wife has to sell their last possession, their horse and wagon, which up until now he'd been earning money as a water carrier. What happens? The guy who bought the horse and he bought it for a cheap price, figuring he'll cheap them out of it. You know, he gets it very cheap. He goes, he finds a treasure under a tree, starts chopping down the tree to get it. The tree falls on him, kills him. The treasure, meanwhile, he's loaded onto the wagon. The wagon makes it back home because it goes back to the home it's used to, and all of a sudden the guy becomes rich with this tremendous treasure because...
Where's the story from?
The Alshif tells it. The Heiner Dhamma Rav Elazar, and this is like what Rav Elazar said, my dichtiv kini baz l'yoyim katnus. What does it mean? The Pasuk says, who scorns the day of small things? So what does it mean? Mi gorem tzaddikim, she is bazbis shulchan and lasid lavei. Who causes the tzaddikim that their table is misbazbis, is lessened, there's something cheapened in it, lasid lavei, is katnus shahayah behen, there's a smallness that they had, shloyah minu b'akadosh baruch hu, that they didn't have the total trust in Eivish. Even though the tzaddikim we're talking about, even they, because there's believing and there's believing. The Chofetz Chaim has an interesting verse about this in one of his Sforim. He says, if you ask the average Yid, do you believe in the Eivish? Of course I do. And in that sense, he's a tzaddik. But on the other hand, does he have such a high level of amunah that he doesn't have to worry from one day to the next? So like this guy in the story, lots ask it. So that's what we're saying. Like, therefore, his table in Gan Eden, he'll have a table in Gan Eden, but it'll be missing something. I'll bet it's like as if you had a fully set table and there's one thing missing.
How are you allowed to believe in that kind of focus? To that extent.
Each person has their own level, has to reach a level of bitachon. There's different levels. In Chovas HaLevavos, I think it is, it talks about 10 levels of bitachon that a person may go through in their lifetime. Most people end up someplace in the middle, but people can go to higher and higher levels of it. So yeah, there is a level of bitachon where you know the Eivishter can provide you. I mean,
I don't know that's a lot.
But there's different levels of a net. You know, I mean, we could talk about this a long time, where the time is short, but, you know, for example, where at the end of Vayeshev, when it says that Yosef was punished with 2 years in jail for asking the Saramashkim to help him get out of there, what's the problem in that Mishtadlus? Because on Yosef's level, that's not appropriate for him. To be Mishtadl in that way is not appropriate for him, especially to rely on an Egyptian who only thinks about themselves. That's not the appropriate kind of Mishtadlus for him. For you or me, it might be, but not for him. So each person has their level. Rava says there's a different meaning of this pasuk. Eilu ktanei b'nei Rishi Yisrael. This refers to the young children of Rishoyim among the Jewish people. Meaning the Rishoyim have young children. No, it's the two different explanations of the pasuk. One, we were saying about tzaddikim or the lack of a moment. Rava is taking the pasuk in a different way. You have the children of Rishoyim. They caused their father's judgment to be mevazdez, to be made light of, to be whipped up. Meaning when the fathers come to be judged, over in the front of the fathers have an excuse. You're going to punish us, then why did you make our teeth blunt during our lifetimes, that we had children who died young, Nebuch? And now, so like now, we're having to be punished twice. And you know, Hazan and Hazan, it's not fair. And therefore, the Eibishter accepts that argument and reduces their punishment. So therefore, the Ketanim, Kimi Baz Liyem Katnus, who causes that the original judgment is scorned and not enforced in full, Liyem on the day loss of Lavoi, Katnus, the fact that they had small children who they had to go through the tsar of losing them. Marshall says that the meaning may be the other way around, that the children have a valid complaint to the Eivishter. What are you punishing us for? Our fathers have Eivis. And the Eivishter says that.
There's 42 children who
were denied by that. That's okay. They lost in love. Their parents will have a valid complaint. If we had to undergo that in our lifetime, what are you punishing us lost in love? If it were not for the following tefillah of David, all the Jewish people would be so poor and so demeaned that all they could do is make a living by selling grease. Rav says it's basically mystic stuff like fat and tallow and whatever that sticks to your clothes, you're filthy. Were it not for the prayer of David, Shenema, the pasuk says, Shisa Hashem lord olahem. This is at the end of Kapitel Tes of Tillim. It's describing over there the situation of the Aniim, meaning the Jewish people who are poor and desperate and gullus. Both. But David is asking, at least Shisa Hashem Mordo Lahem, at least Hashem make a rulership for them, meaning those Aniim should at least have some wealth and some power in order that the Goyim shouldn't completely think of them as absolute nothings. As the pasuk continues, Yedu Goyim and Hashem Esela, let the Goyim realize that they're just man, that they're not gods. That wouldn't happen if the Jewish people were so demeaned that all they could make a living from is selling grease. So that's David Tzvila. But Amar Rav Yehuda bar Yevarechya, Il Molit Tzvilos Hashem Chavakuk, if it weren't for the following Tzvila of Chavakuk, Hayu Beit Tzemer Chachamim Eskatsim B'Talas Sachas V'Oizkim Atzorda, you would have to have a situation where two Tzemer Chachamim have to cover themselves with one talis, because they're so poor, and learn Torah together. Shenema, the pasuk says, Hashem shamati shima chayarei. See, Hashem, this Chavakuk says this in his tefillah. I've heard what you've said. I've heard your hearing. Yoreisi, I was afraid. Hashem, Tolchal b'kerev shanim chayehu. Your work in the midst of years keep them alive. So I'll take you b'kerev shanim el b'kiruv shnayim. Not b'kerev shanim in the midst of years, but b'kiruv shnayim with the closeness of two. By rights, in other words, not by rights. Logically, it would have to be Chavakuk is saying the Gzeira of Eivishter is that you'd have to have Torah can only be done with Kiro Shnayim, two people having to sit close together under the same blanket so that it can't afford their own clothes. Please save us from that Chayehu, keep them alive and give them a better Karnosa than that. And the first one talk about why you need Chavakuk to fill out for David. One is that David is talking about the people who work for a living. Chavakuk is talking about the Melech HaChamim. David is talking in the first Beit HaMikdash. Chavakuk is talking afterwards, etc. Break for Maariv.